Hi, Sandra. How are you?
Just terrific. And you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
All right, today's topic, right up my alleys. What are five employee types you wouldn't fire, but boy, are they irritating?
Well, there's a very interesting article, Jill, coming out of Business Management. The editors of Business Management teamed up with one of the experts in this field, in the workplace field, Maria McIntyre, to do this article. So let me say that I disagree with all of it, but let me go through what the esteemed editors.
At least all of it is it, like that's clear.
Yeah. Okay. So these are five employee types you wouldn't want to fire, but they're irritating. So let's go through them and let's decide. Are they right, or am I right? Okay. One is the timekeeper. She knows what time everyone arrives and when they start work in earnest. She knows when they leave at the end of the day, when they scoot out for lunch and return. She knows how many times Eddie steps out for a smoke, 6, 10, when the weather's nice, and how long they last, 9 minutes. That's nearly an hour's worth of breaks on the foul weather days, an hour and a half when the days are pleasant. You can be sure she shares the data with her coworkers, but when she lets you know about it, she's crossed the annoying line. So do you want to deal with her? That's question number one. Okay. Two, Mr. Motormouth. He spots you walking down the office and accompanies you to the door, blabs about the stuff he thinks you want to hear. His kid, his car, weekend, the Mets, the Yankees. Not about the Knicks, though. Don't worry about that. It's harmless blathering, but you've got a work to do, and so does he. So when he pops into your office at random times to bioviate, he starts to stick in your craw. The strange thing about him, though, is he doesn't say anything in staff meetings. He's just quiet. Not a word. Okay. Three, my little toddler, also known as the high-maintenance employee. She performs well and aims to please, but not without a lot of care and feeding. She's in your office a lot. She wants guidance, assurance, clarification. She challenges policies, points out flaws, is free with opinion. If you want her to do the job right, then, quote, listen to me, unquote. She's draining, like your kid. You're cutting the crust off her peanut butter sandwich and making sure the right colored straw is planted in her chocolate milk. One of these in your office is enough. Okay. Next, remember, these are people that you want to hold on to and find ways to work with. Okay. Four, the stop sign. He knows his job description and won't veer off it. No matter how busy your organization gets, he gets his task done but won't do anything extra. And certainly, you can't add to his load. Quote, hold it right there, he says. You put something on my plate, now take something off. Voluntarily help someone else? No time. His day is carefully calibrated to accomplish his duties and nothing more. And finally, the redwood. Similar to Deadwood, an employee who doesn't accomplish much, the redwood has been around for a long, long time at your organization, and there's no cutting him down. He's beloved by those who have the power to get rid of you. He came with the job, came with the company, has been there as long as the stairwell, and you've got to deal with him. He's set in your ways. Won't go any faster, and Excel, what's that? You fantasize about a retirement party for him. So these are the people who the editors and this author, Dr. McIntyre, say, you know, you have to keep. You wouldn't fire, but boy, they're irritating. So my view on this is I'd fire every single one of them. I'd find ways to get rid of every single one of them. All they do is mess up the culture of your firm. I had two of these people. One was a female director. She directed art and copy for about a quarter of my staff, and she was very good with clients. Clients loved her. Loved her. Smart, smiling. People under her hated her because of the way she treated them, the way she handled them. It was awful. And the second person was, again, my fault. I should have fired them rather than tolerating them, head of my client services group for a long time. Again, clients liked him a lot. People under him, particularly women, could not stomach him the way he poked at them in this awful, awful way. Demotivating. And I lost a lot of good people who left because of him. Again, my fault. I tolerated him. They were irritating as hell. I tolerated him. I should have fired him and kept some of the good people under him. So that's my view. I would have gotten rid of all of them. But they feel that the basic editors of business management feel that you have to tolerate them, do ways with them. So, Jill, what do you think?
I think that a bunch of people need to grow up. In a nutshell, yeah. I don't understand why there isn't. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, actually. I mean, all kidding aside. And what we concluded is that the old framework for learning the organization and learning where you fit in the in the framework is been chucked out the window, mm-hmm. and that it's in the long run fundamentally pointless to put somebody someplace if they don't know what that framework is. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. If someone were to corral me and say, hey, what do we do about this? I would say, hate to say this, but we've got to go back to the old way. I mean, you wouldn't take a raw recruit and not put them through basic. How many people fail out of basic training?
Right.
And sure. The reason that I'm saying this is before you get to the types of employees and how you have to manage them, which I'll tell you something else. This happened about 5 or 6 years ago, and I almost, my head almost exploded. Somebody brought me the Bose handbook for how to treat millennial staff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Somebody wrote this?
Yeah.
And again, I understand that many arguments can be made. As a matter of fact, we were just talking about something. This is a digression, but I would love your opinion on it. We've got some extra time. Just talking about this with a colleague. I don't know if you remember that wonderful moment when AOL and Time Warner merged.
Yes.
And who showed up without a tie? Was it Jerry Levin or Steve Case?
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Okay. So, but it was notable, not just for whether or not that merger, which I think was pretty much assumed is going to be a disaster.
Yeah, it was the tie, yes.
But no one was thinking about that because it was so, where's your tie?
Yes.
But no,
good,
that
good memory, Jill. Good memory. Yeah.
I raise it now because if you, because there is an informality, it has been decided that, it has been decreed that on many, many levels, you know, these younger kids don't want to wear ties.
Yeah.
It's business. It's a form of business casual. It's what's the word I'm looking for? It's almost undemocratic. It's certainly Jurassic to insist that anyone wear a suit because, you know, why would you? And yet, and I totally see this, and we live in a visual world at this point, so anyone you see on TV, because a lot of these kids are coming, I shouldn't say kids, a lot of these executives are coming on TV with their open collared shirt to show that they're hip and cool.
Sure.
The only
not
thing
not many Lester Holtz Lester Holtz, NBC.
But wait one sec. But wait,
because
that's not the point. The point is when you get to the very, very top tier. I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about your 1% of 1% of 1%.
Yes.
They're all still wearing ties.
Yes. The tie manufacturers are in big trouble still. Very true. A lot of them are out of business.
But the point is, the people that they're allegedly emulating, they're still wearing ties.
Sure.
And so I guess I would say I would go into the tie manufacturing business. If I were looking for a distressed asset to pick up, it would be ties, because the way the pendulum will swing, bad news, folks, you're going to have to start getting dressed again.
Yes. Good point. So finally, before we leave the show, if you keep these people, the five types that we discussed, the crew looks at you, the good people look at you and say, what is the matter with him? What is the matter with Sander Flown? You know, why does he continue to keep these people who are driving everybody nuts? So the onus now is on me. What kind of leader am I to continue to keep these people? So our listeners have to keep that in mind, okay? They look at you because you did not move on them.
Yeah, okay? And it's very hard. Everyone has a reason for hanging on to someone.
Yeah.
And often it is well-meaning, but sometimes you have to look at the, hate to say it, but bigger picture. You've got to look at how it's affecting the organization.
Exactly.
And that's, I wanted to ask you, is that something that your business school kids are, your master's kids are understand even?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Okay.
No way. No way.
Well, no. Good. So there's more work for the dinosaurs, I take it. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, in that case, I will speak to you next week. Okay. Thank you very much, Sander Flown, Leader's
Edge. Have a good week, show.